future of global currency or an experiment doomed to fail? This is the question that follows Bitcoin around and divides investors and experts alike. An entirely virtual monetary system, Bitcoin is the most popular of several cryptocurrencies out there right now. It's one of the most volatile assets you can invest in, with huge variations in price possible in very short time periods. But it's had a phenomenally successful 2020. Bitcoin's value rose from $7,200 to just below $24,000 in December, and it shows no signs of slowing down this year, hitting $50,000 this week. On the show this week, we'll welcome Oliver Telling, the Investors Chronicle's resident cryptocurrency expert, to break down exactly what Bitcoin is and whether it's worth your time and money. I'm John Heumann, and welcome to Not Your Normal Finance Show. So, Oliver, welcome to Not Your Normal Finance Show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me on the show.
Good, good. And you've written lots and lots for us on Bitcoin recently. Tell us about, not just Bitcoin, but about cryptocurrencies more generally, what they are and how they work.
Well, cryptocurrencies, like any other currency, you use them to buy things and you exchange them with other people in exchange for other products or other currencies. Digital cryptocurrencies, unlike your pounds and dollars, are digital. They don't have coins or cash usually, and they effectively exist through an online system backed by computers. Bitcoin is backed by this technology called blockchain, which is a public ledger of every transaction ever made with the currency. This ledger is produced automatically by computers, and it's meant to be highly secure, so hence the crypto in cryptocurrency. Those payment records are also permanent, and they can't be removed from the ledger, hence the block in blockchain. The reason why this blockchain technology is very popular with advocates of Bitcoin is it allows the users to regulate the currency themselves, because all historic transactions can be verified by the users. Records are made and they're authorized for a process called mining, which anyone is allowed to do and receive a small amount of bitcoins as a reward. But if you're thinking that's a way to make a nice buck quickly, then it's not that simple, because doing this requires a lot of energy and it's very complicated, and it requires a lot of computers to do as well.
Okay, so Bitcoin is essentially a currency, and if we think about it like a currency, it's something you go out and spend. And you know, that sort of potentially makes it viable. In it, you know, we've seen throughout the pandemic that the world has suddenly become, you know, even more digital than it seemed even before. And a cryptocurrency seems like it would be, you know, a perfect part of that. It isn't happening though, is it? People aren't really spending these things.
Yeah, as you say, it's this very kind of utopian idea of cryptocurrency and how it could be integrated into this new digital economy, which we increasingly find ourselves in today. It was invented in 2008 by a still unknown person. And I think that year is significant because it's a time when the world was in the midst of a global financial crisis brought on by these irresponsible banks that were too big to fail. And Bitcoin and its blockchain technology offered a way of taking control of the monetary system from the banks, from the governments that bailed them out, and giving control back to the people who create this blockchain and who authorize the use of Bitcoin themselves. But of course, I think it's telling now that all the headlines are about Bitcoin's value in dollars. It shows that a lot of people aren't really using Bitcoin as a currency and just buying it as an investment. And that's where all the discussion about Bitcoin seems to be at the moment, outside of its very fervent fan communities. Mm. And also, in a way, Bitcoin is becoming part of the financial system as more as an investment. I think it's very similar to the whole Reddit GameStop saga we've had recently, which was kind of portrayed simplistically as the good retail investors against the bad guys on Wall Street. Similarly, we've got the kind of new utopian digital currency against the old way of doing things by banks and governments. But it's not really that simple, because as in the Reddit saga and now Bitcoin, there's a lot of middlemen in the middle facilitating this trading, making a lot of money in the process. and a lot of institutional investors getting on board as well, getting very rich in the process. As
yeah, we'll come back to that. I actually saw some research from the platform AJ Bell that was asking people why they preferred or why they were buying cryptocurrency, and only 11% were buying cryptocurrency to make digital payments with. The rest, you can imagine, are doing it for speculative reasons. So you know, as a currency, what can you buy with it? Surely, for a currency to have worth, it has to be able to you have to be able to transact with it. What can you buy with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies?
Well, I think PayPal now allows you to make payments in Bitcoin. I don't think you can do so through Amazon, but there are third-party services you can access through Amazon that allow you to do that. Recently, there was a news story about a doctor in New York, I believe, who was accepting Bitcoin as payment for the fees he's charging payments to be tested for coronavirus at home. But generally, yeah, its use is very limited, which brings into question what is the inherent value of Bitcoin if it's not being used as widely as dollars and pounds. How do you measure its inherent value and judging its worth?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, sort of institutional investors are getting on board, but with cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, which has appears to have given it some validity. But they're doing that on the basis of what? That they can make a quick buck because they're riding a wave of momentum? Or, you know, are there people out there actually who see, you know, that this is more than a momentum story, that actually cryptocurrencies can become part of the mainstream and will do quite quickly?
Yeah, I think Ruffa was one of the one of our managers who got on board with Bitcoin quite recently. That made quite a lot of headlines and news because Ruffa is traditionally known for its quite conservative investment approach. So the fact that it was getting on board with Bitcoin was seen to give a lot of validity to the cryptocurrency. But it's also worth noting, I think it only allocated about 2.5% of its portfolio to Bitcoin, which suggests it's not that confident about giving any significant back into the currency. And maybe, like a lot of institutional investors, it just doesn't want to be left behind as a sort of Bitcoin FOMO, as we were saying in our recent article. FOMO, for people who maybe don't use social media, stands for fear of missing out. So for anyone who's been watching, people maybe invested a few thousand, £4,000 or dollars in 2013 in Bitcoin, suddenly become millionaires this year. They might look down their nose at Bitcoin, but simultaneously be thinking, oh, well, can't I get a bit richer as well if everyone else is?
Yeah, absolutely. So what do we conclude in that article? How do we play Bitcoin FOMO?
Well, there's a variety of ways. You can buy it directly through these Bitcoin exchanges. You can download quite simply on your phone. There's a lot of apps that now allow you to do that. A lot of stock trading apps and payment apps also allow you to buy Bitcoin through their services. The thing about Bitcoin is you also need a virtual wallet to store the currency. So some of these Bitcoin exchanges come with wallets, but the sort of Bitcoin purists would recommend you get an external wallet, which provides you with a kind of anonymous code that you provide to the exchange, which keeps all of your Bitcoin purchases supposedly private. And so that's how you do it, buy Bitcoin directly. There's also a number of ways we were suggesting you could get indirect exposure to the currency if you don't want to go through the complicated process of downloading a Bitcoin exchange, getting a Bitcoin wallet, and you want to buy into the hype with maybe the platforms you're already using and maybe without as much risk as buying it directly. So there's a few crypto miners, I believe, who are listed on the stock exchange. These are the people who create the computers that back up the blockchain technology behind Bitcoin.
That'd be Argo blockchain?
Yeah, Argo yeah. Blockchain. Also, Coinbase is set to become the first, I believe, cryptocurrency exchange to list on the stock market. I think it currently has about 35 million users, which is
I guess, symbolic of how much more popular Bitcoin is coming and how maybe investing in Coinbase is an indirect way of getting exposure to the currency.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that sounds like it's sort of the old and new world, you know, financial world. So they're coming together, they're intertwining, in the example of Coinbase coming to market. I mean, you know, it's easy to get access to Bitcoin from the sound of things. The big question is whether you should. You know, as you say, it's very hard to understand how this is valued, what the inherent worth of Bitcoin is, and whether this is purely being driven up by people's fear of missing out. So yeah, there is a big question of whether you should. And you know, there have been lots of warnings by regulators about Bitcoin. I mean, should we pay attention to them?
Well, the investment case for Bitcoin is pretty simple: is it can go up a lot. And it can go up very quickly. The counter point to that is it can also go down very quickly, which is why lots of regulators around the world are tightening their scrutiny of it. And the FCA in the UK has banned trading in all cryptocurrency derivatives this year. It's also why if you do want to buy Bitcoin, whether directly or indirectly, financial advisors also generally recommend a very low exposure to the cryptocurrency. It shouldn't be overtaking your exposure to bonds or equities, generally speaking, much like with Ruffer, the investment manager we were speaking about earlier. It's only 2.5% of that portfolio. But unfortunately, a lot of kind of warning flags has been raised. I think AJ Bell released some research today which found about a quarter of Bitcoin investors don't have any traditional savings or investments, like pensions. So if you're banking all of your investment income on Bitcoin, a lot of people might raise a few eyebrows at that.
Is that question of when everyone decides to sell at the same time, it does obviously become very difficult to sell. So we've heard, you know, how you use Bitcoin and what it is. We've heard a few pros and a few cons as well. We sent James Norrington out this week to speak to someone who's very much an advocate of Bitcoin, Wilhelm German, who's the chief technology officer at Bitnook.com, which is a Swiss regulated crypto exchange.
So obviously Bitcoin has been massively in the news. In the past year, we've seen the value rise from $4,000 to $40,000 in a year. It's now hovering at around $38,500. But it's whipping back and forth, a highly volatile asset class. Is this a dangerous bubble, and is it appropriate for retail investors?
Well, there is never one side story for such questions being asked, you know. So I think once somebody knows if the situation is bubblish or the situation is pretty, I would say, lined up, right, with the market and it's clean, so we would be able to make clear decisions. At this moment, I think we see the tendencies, which is quite obvious. What we can look through the timeline, what happened with the Bitcoins in the past, when we talk about halving, the period after the halving shows the tendencies that possibly the Bitcoin in this year could go nearly to 100,000 or so, to that level. And I think that that obviously there are, you know, massive amounts of the reasons it could go up or down, but the main situation is obvious that it could go that level. And
but with the volatility, yeah. is that appropriate for retail investors? Because you know, we talk about a sort of a big target of say something go to $100,000, but for a retail investor rushing in, they put all their money in. And then if it halves in value, the falls could be very violent on the journey up to a high point. And you see sort of say that the UK regulator, the FCA, has told people to be prepared to lose all their money. So is that a case of regulators being a bit old-fashioned? Or how should investors think about crypto if they are going to have it as part of their portfolio?
Well, I think that that your approach, whatever asset you look into, should be, you know, safe type approach. You should really see what type of diversification you want to have. And obviously going like clearly with all your money into the asset class, which is kind of new and new to the environment, is not the best way to do it. And it's not even about the crypto or any other type of the asset. So I would say yes. I mean, obviously, once the asset is still new to the market and it's kind of young comparing to other assets, it's volatile to many factors, including social factor, social media factor, you know, various government decisions. So you don't want to be too much into trust with investments, which is related to other type of people decisions. So to be very exact with you, there is obviously a chance that Bitcoin in near time goes down or goes even more up. I think what we are trying to tell to most of our customers, which joins our regulated exchange in Switzerland, that, you know, the main argument is to look into a long-term perspective.
And that long-term perspective, is it a lot of the bull case behind Bitcoin and other cryptos is obviously the erosion of the value of fiat currencies by sort of ultra loose monetary policy, massive government borrowing to fund big infrastructure projects, which devalues the currency and value of their bonds. What are the secular factors behind crypto, and is it here to stay?
Well, I think the year by year it shows that the crypto is becoming more and more stable into the market. The answers probably lie in the regulatory moments and the questions which cryptocurrencies can solve. And there are obviously a lot of the industries where cryptocurrencies are going to solve the problems, and they are. While being new asset to the class, it gives a pattern others, you know, to look more deeper into it. And wherever they look deeper into it, they find new aspects of regulations, of anti-money laundering procedures, and they are being implemented. So I would say that, behind the moments are showing the clear patterns that institutional investors are coming. And, you know, the rise of the Bitcoin price, the recent rise is more than obvious that it goes through the stack of that the Bitcoins are being purchased, the free Bitcoins are being purchased from the regulated exchanges and other exchanges, and there is less and less free Bitcoins on the market, which, you know, after next happening and after current happening, the happening of the Bitcoin, which left less Bitcoins are mined per day, and the demand is still high, and obviously that the price goes up. So to be exact, how much of this pattern is going to go forward is very hard. But obviously that when we see that large players come and the large amounts are being put, the MicroStrategy and other examples show that, you know, people are trust in this asset and they do believe in that. And they are not bulls, you know. These investments are pretty solid and a long-term approach. So that's, you know, I think that's the pattern which shows which way it goes. So the more institutional players we have, I mean, the more stability we have, because it's not based on emotions.
Right. So there is, I think that when Bitcoin was founded, the supply of it has been, it's been set, so it was set finitely, am I correct in saying that? But there are other cryptocurrencies out there. There's Ethereum. There's Dogecoin, which was sort of bid up a bit by sort of Elon Musk's comments about wanting to be paid in it. Which cryptocurrencies? I mean, how should investors, I mean, institutional or retail investors, look at the different types of cryptocurrency, and which ones are going to have durability and stay around, and which ones are going to just disappear?
Well, I think that obviously we always look into the history and then the community which supports the cryptocurrencies, and obviously if we look to the very very prehistory, and we see Bitcoin there as the very beginning of this era, right, with the Satoshi Nakamoto idea, and it has a very huge community behind it, and I think the community is the major factor to representing the stability and the progress of cryptocurrencies. obviously the top five, the biggest ones, they're showing now the hype pattern. They're going up, and they are mainly solving the solutions which stands. And if Bitcoin is remaining more like investment type, it goes more to investment type of the coin now. Ethereum solves more type of the payment issues. Obviously, the problems, they are still persistent. You know, the transaction speed and the transaction price. It's also currently the factor which you know, makes others to look for the new type of the solutions, including Ethereum choice. So I would look positive to the top coins, but obviously I would recommend people to stick with really major coins and you know, to be very, very cautious about getting into the new coins or the tokens, which usually is mostly affected very, very, I would say, influential by the small type of the decisions. And that brings a variosity.
So just to summarize, I mean, if I were to say Bitcoin, what's it useful for in the real economy? Three things. And Ethereum, what that's useful for in the real economy. Dogecoin, what that's useful in the real... What would you say to each of those three? And do you see futures in those three examples?
Well, I would say that that if we look to the Bitcoin, I would say that Bitcoin should keep as an investment option to keep people their assets diversified from the traditional fiat and traditional type of assets into the Bitcoin, which could be a good keeper of the crypto side. Ethereum, with its if its pattern and the token platforms and the smart contracts could be a helpful and progressing solution for payments and the on top payments of the currency. And well, to be commenting Dogecoin, I would say that, you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of it, and I wouldn't be, you know, digging into this since I'm not even treating this as a major coin there.
I know Bitcoin and Ethereum. What other, are there any other coins that you would count as part of the major currencies that investors should consider as part of the crypto asset class as investable currencies?
I think that that everyone should be thinking of not just clearly following the pattern where to invest and where to put, but thinking what type of the solution the coin solves, right? For example, EOS, they have a great technology behind, and the coin is still not progressing that level that somebody would, you know, would expect it. But I think they still have a good time to shoot out, and obviously that you know, we see some examples with like Ripple and so on, that, you know, we never know the real stories behind. So to be recommending someone to be investing into some major coins or to be putting them into the top is always, you know, I mean, that's what I would like to stay out of this. But I would say that the main topic when you look into, you should be looking what is the idea behind it, the idea behind the coin, and who is the people behind the coin, and how it was, you know, developed, and what problem it solves. And once you have some expertise in it, or you put more due diligence to this, even simple due diligence, you can find the way for you to choose your own coins or to use them in your real life. And that would show you where to put your money in, and exactly, you know, part of your portfolio. I never recommend someone to put, like, you know, all of his money or even half or even a third of his money. So it should be a very smart diversification.
Hi all, producer John here, just popping up to let you know that's only 10 minutes of a full 30-minute interview with Wilhelm that is available on the Investors Chronicle website. On with the show.
So we heard some very enthusiastic comments there from someone who's very much involved in the Bitcoin industry. Perhaps the biggest enthusiast of Bitcoin today, certainly the most famous, is Elon Musk. And he's been up to something this week, which has reinforced many people's view that Bitcoin, the only way is up.
Tonight, Elon Musk makes one of his riskiest bets ever, linking Tesla's fortunes to Bitcoins, the world's richest man now investing $1.5 billion worth of his company's money in the cryptocurrency. Musk's bet on Bitcoin doesn't stop there, though. Tesla says it will soon let customers buy its cars using Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, as of late, Bitcoin had been falling down from its recent highs, from about $40,000 approaching the $35,000 mark again. But then Elon Musk decided he was going to throw his weight behind the currency. And pretty much as soon as he made those announcements, Bitcoin has rallied back up to some record highs. I think earlier today it was now approaching $50,000 for a single Bitcoin.
It's insane. One Bitcoin for a Tesla, I guess, then. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, Tesla Musk is an erratic character, albeit a very successful one. You know, he's done some sort of odd things that have caught the attention of the SEC in the past. This seems quite odd, but actually a Bitcoin bull would say no. This is actually, again, reinforcing the case for owning Bitcoin, and actually more companies are likely to follow suit and actually use Bitcoin as part of their treasury management. I mean, is that a possibility that you think you know may come to pass?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time, I believe, Musk has spoken about Bitcoin. But I think what the recent announcements do is only further throughout the ambiguity of where do we place Bitcoin in this spectrum between an investment and a currency. At the same time as Musk is saying he's going to accept payments of Bitcoin through Tesla, he's also invested $1.5 billion in the currency. So does he want to promote it as this way of making online payments, or does he want to promote it as this way of using it as a speculative asset for which I presume he hopes Tesla will make a lot more money? I think we saw a similar thing with Jack Dorsey of Twitter. Early this year, he was tweeting about Bitcoin in this kind of very utopian way, which its most kind of fervent followers speak about Bitcoin as this kind of model for the ideal way of the internet can work. At the same time, Dorsey's other company, Square, made about a $50 million investment in Bitcoin last year. So these kind of big CEOs who Bitcoin advocates are saying are given validity to Bitcoin, whereas a currency as an investment, it's not really clear what they are backing Bitcoin as.
I think a lot of it ultimately boils down to human nature. I think you know, maybe there is an element of kind of internet altruism. You know, getting back to the good old days. You know, when the internet was free. But I also think, you know, people want to make money. And, you know, I think we see that in the AJ Bell research. You know, we saw it in GameStop. I mean, you know, that was a bit of stick it to the man, but a lot of people jump in on, I would suspect, in the hope of making money. I mean, is this whole thing just not another mania? You know, where people, you know, spot a rising price, jump on board, and hope that it keeps going when there's actually virtually no substance to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's GameStop, Bitcoin,
Tesla. Tesla.
Yeah, it all comes down to groupthink in a way. I think, and if you looked at the people investing in investing in GameStop, investing in Bitcoin, investing in Tesla, I imagine there's probably a lot of crossover between the people buying these stocks and buying cryptocurrencies. I mean, we have obviously seen plenty of stock market bubbles before, that goes back hundreds of years, but there is something different about the way these groups of investors come together these days. I think John Maynard Keynes' theory of the stock market is very relevant here. He had a theory of the stock market called the beauty contest theory, which was based on this game newspapers used to publish back in the 20th century. Might be something the kind of so-called Bitcoin bros might have enjoyed in days before the internet. They published like hundreds of faces of young women, and readers would be asked to vote for the most attractive face, and you send your submissions, and the people who chose like the five most popular faces won the competition, and I think they got a prize as a reward for noticing the most attractive woman. But Keynes's point was, you don't win for choosing the inherently most attractive face. You win for choosing the face that the most people think is the most attractive.
hence the analogy with a stock market. You don't necessarily win by spotting the best fundamentally run company. You win by choosing the stock that everyone else is choosing. And that's always been the rule of why share prices go up, and it's the rule of supply and demand. But what happens today, I think you don't have to guess what other people are picking as their favorite face in the beauty contest, because they all congregate on Reddit, on Twitter, through social media. They know what their friends and what their fellow retail investors are buying, and they're telling each other, I'm buying GameStop, so you buy GameStop. I'm buying Bitcoin, so you buy it. And the ultimate of that is Elon Musk, who all of these Bitcoin and all of these Tesla fans follow, suddenly saying, well, I'm buying Bitcoin. So suddenly everyone else says, oh, well, we should get behind them. And it's this kind of self-reciprocating circle of investors, which are kind of fueling these huge rises in each of these securities.
It used to be called pump and dump where I started this job. Yeah, I mean, that sounds just like collusion on a massive scale to manipulate share prices. And as far as I was aware, that was illegal. Maybe not. I mean, you know, maybe the tech giants have found a way around that too. But for me, I think that sort of that reflects something about the stock market today versus the one that I'm sort of more comfortable with, is that I actually do think that you should pick out the inherently most attractive face and stick with it over the long term. Because, you know, trying to second guess what everyone else is doing, you know, you can't keep up. There's too many actors. And at some point, those gains will be lost. Whereas the inherently attractive face will always be attractive.
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't worth looking at the inherent value of stocks, then we wouldn't write our magazine.
No, absolutely.
Read it, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have to admit, I'm a bit of a Bitcoin skeptic. I have to admit, I sit there and think, Christ, I wish I'd have bought $4,000 worth of Bitcoin in 2013. But I didn't. I mean, what do you make of it all? I mean, you know, for those who haven't read your column.
Yeah, I mean, my column was pretty much a summary of what's been the running theme for this discussion is, yeah, it started as this very utopian idea, very much like the internet started with social media in Silicon Valley in the 1990s. But at the end of the day, as you say, it's human nature. Everyone wants to make a quick buck, and that can often take precedent to these very idealistic ideas about how things are formed in the first place. Social media isn't this free democratic platform that it's set out to be. It's got these algorithms which bias the most divisive opinions. It makes millions of dollars every year by selling our personal data. That isn't kind of a free democratic platform as far as I can see. And as far as I can see, Bitcoin isn't this kind of democratic, regulated by the people, utopian currency that it set out to be anymore. It's a way for people to make money. And whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, or whether or not that's a safe thing or a dangerous thing, I think is down for the individual investor to decide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, putting money into the stock market, you know, is a good thing, generally speaking, because that money, you know, the idea, the principle and the mechanism often works, finds its way into those companies, and it allows those companies to invest and create jobs and grow their profits and then their share price. And so you grow your wealth with it. I don't see how that mechanism works. I don't see that mechanism here. There's no investment. Yeah. Where's it going? It's just there. So it just becomes, it's just a currency. A store of value.
Yeah, like what is the social investment of Bitcoin? There is not. I'm not sure what the ESG case for cryptocurrencies is.
Well, it's anti. If anything, it's anti because of the because of the energy usage.
Yeah,
I think I read that it uses as much energy. The world's Bitcoin mining operations use as much energy as Switzerland.
Yeah, I think a little bit more actually.
It's kind of mad. It's kind of mad. So to close. A question, we sort of touched on it earlier, is this the year, with Bitcoin touching $50,000, that it's going to become a mainstream asset class?
I mean, it's certainly becoming more and more mainstream each year. There's also lots of people making the case that it could become an asset class in the vein of gold and other kind of safe haven assets. People kind of flood into gold when inflation is going up because gold is seen to have this kind of strong inherent value, which can survive through times of turbulence. Similarly, Bitcoin is seen as kind of very independent from the central banks, which might stoke inflation because of its blockchain technology. It's seen as very secure. So people have increasingly been arguing for it as a kind of inflation hedge, as a safe haven asset like gold. But yeah, it just seems too volatile to really put it in the same ballpark as gold at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, gold has done well. I mean, over sort of, you know, a fairly extended period, but it hasn't exhibited anywhere near the volatility of Bitcoin. And, you know, I would never suggest that something that you can lose 50% of your initial investment on day one could be considered a store of value, or indeed, you know, any kind of sort of hedge against inflation. The volatility kills it for me, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of Bitcoin is philosophy and idealism about what it could be. But when you look at the numbers, at least in the current time, it doesn't really add up to what people say it could be.
No, you forgot the fear and greed as well, which are the other two big powerful emotions that tend to drive the stock markets. Well, that's been brilliant talking to you, Oliver. Thank you for joining me this week, and thank you for all of the work you've done on Bitcoin in the last month or so. I'd encourage you all to get on the website and have a read of that. There's absolutely stacks of it. And if you want us to answer any more questions on Not Your Normal Finance Show, do email us at icpodcast@ft.com, or give us any suggestions for anything you want us to chat about. And you can do that on social media as well. So thank you all for listening. Thank you again, Oliver. And we'll be back next week. Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.